Hello, everyone. This is the American Israelite Podcast, Let There Be Light Podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Netanel Ted Deutsch, and I'm here with my co-host,
Julie Babs Burnson Brook.
And I'm no longer wearing a mask, and I'll get into that story in a few minutes.
We're all shot here.
I get the shot too. So today is Wednesday, March 3rd, and this paper comes out March 4th. My mom's birthday would have been Monday, March 1st, but mom died, and we'll talk about that.
Well, she just missed her birthday.
And your birthday was last Friday.
Oh, we had such a riot at my birthday party. So it was Purim. It was the day of Purim, and I created my own surprise birthday party for my family for Shabbat. And I made everyone come in costume. I was Queen Esther. I told my sister that she should be Vashti.
Your sister drove in from Chicago?
No, we were all on Zoom. I told her she should be Vashti. It was appropriate for her. Now she then
Why did she get her head cut? She gets excommunicated.
She likes to dance. So I told her she had to be Vashti, so she turned it around right away. She goes, "You're right, I am the feminist," because, you know, Vashti has become the feminist icon. And, in fact, there's a new book out for children called Vashti's Comfy Pants.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Vashti has become quite a figure. Now, the other thing, people are also naming their dog Vashti, because if the dog doesn't obey, so the dog becomes becomes Vashti. But Vashti is supposed to be the feminist now because she said no. And unfortunately, she came to a bad end. My mother put my father in the Haman costume, and it was hysterical.
Oh, my.
It was hysterical. But we were in costume. We sang. We danced. It was for just my immediate family. So no friends. Don't be offended. We didn't invite any friends. It was just immediate family.
Well, you know, you also have the same birthday as Dr. Gary Kirsch.
That's what you tell me.
And he's my age, so he'd be 63, and then you were...
I was 61.
Okay. So yeah. He has the same date. And then my birthday is this Sunday. Coming up the 7th.
Yeah. So we actually, instead of me cooking Shabbat dinner, I have a challah out, but I had fresh challah, but we ordered in from Trios, and then I got my favorite birthday cake, which is the Grater's ice cream cake, raspberry chip birthday cake.
So. Oh, raspberry. That's like my favorite. Raspberry sorbet. I love that raspberry.
So it was really fun. And I did tell my family this is the last Zoom I've been doing it for a whole year, and no one else has made one single Zoom in the entire time but me. And I know they're boring and awkward, but we have to do it somehow.
Well, I think the pandemic is kind of slowly coming to an end.
I think we're feeling some relief.
We are, and it's spring. And so I wanted to tell publicly thank Julie, because she relentlessly... you were contacting and finding out.
I was putting myself on every possible waiting list, so I wasn't able to schedule because I wasn't 65, and I didn't have a lifetime illness. But I was putting myself on every single solitary waiting list.
I don't know how you found out about all these things.
Gossip.
Gossip.
Okay. So through gossip, I found out about Rite Aid between here and Dayton, and I put myself on every single solitary waiting list.
You called up the pharmacy. Directly. Then they get the pharmacist on the phone, and then they would put you on the list.
Paper and pencil list. They would write you down. And they numbered people. I know they were doing it because if you would call back up and ask what number you were, they would tell you. And she actually said to me at one point, please tell people not to call anymore, because we're taking this list as a precaution.
Over 150.
Right. We're taking this as a precaution because we don't want to waste any vaccines. And I tried it with Kroger and Walgreens, and they wouldn't do it because they said, when they have someone that doesn't show up, they automatically put it on their computer system and then hope someone comes in. But once they put it up
on there that there's a vaccine available, it goes up on there.
There's an app that's picking it up.
Right. Somebody is connecting to that and calling them immediately. And then that thing is gone within a couple of, an hour or two.
So the system is working. And I know a lot of people, in fact, my daughter-in-law got up there and they said, you know, we know about Cincinnati, but we've never heard of Blue Ash. This place has been filled with people from Blue Ash.
All right, so I have to tell my story. So you were on the list for this Dayton, Rite Aid in Dayton. Okay. So you call me. Actually, I'll have to tell my other story. So a week before, you called me up and you said, you know, I'm going scheduled because of Jewish hospital that I'm getting a shot because the
family. There was another leftover one,
okay,
yeah.
Families were left, okay, and they're doing families now. And this was Friday, and you call up and say, well, I got the vaccine when I went through the study. Okay, so I'm not going to get the vaccine. I already got it. So do you want my vaccine? I said, of course I want your vaccine.
Because they wouldn't take anyone in my family, to be honest. Okay. It was only for me. It was a very limited supply that they had. It was just the very, very, very last.
Okay, all right. Okay. So you call me on a Friday, and you go, I've got this shot. Do you want it? And she's like, it's tomorrow.
Which I'm like, Shabbat.
What? Shabbat? I can't. And then it was like 1:30. Okay. So I was mulling it over, and I said, no, I can't. And then I thought about it, and I said, you know, if I could walk up there, it would have been a five mile walk up there and back to get the shot. And then I would have been scheduled for another Saturday,
yes,
like 3-4 weeks later. And I
depending on whether it was,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, I asked the rabbi the question whether or not I could take that shot. And he goes, yeah, you could take it. If you would walk up there, you know, the only problem is you've got like automatic doors and stuff like that. That becomes an issue.
So it was a very snowy weekend.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that's my one COVID story. And then, you were put people on the list for this Rite Aid place, blah, blah, blah. And you call me up and you say, well, I've got you on this list for Sunday at 2:45 at X location, right? Remember?
Right, because okay, they called me, okay, and I had three, okay, names on there.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So then you call, then you send me a text, well, they've changed the location.
Right.
And then it was a different location.
Correct.
So I said, okay, fine. So I've got Sunday is like day of, like, you know, I've got yard work to do, I've got housework to do, I've got stuff I got to get done. And so I start working and doing stuff, and then I figure, well, about 1 o'clock, I'll start driving up there. Okay. So I drive up there. It's like about an hour to get there.
Yes, it is.
So it's an hour. I leave at 1 o'clock, get up there about 2 o'clock, and there is probably, I'd say like 30 people in line already. Okay. And it goes from like over here all the way around the store back, and I'm back here. And then there was like 10 people behind me. Okay. So then we were there from 2 to 2:30. And then at like 2:30, the guy comes out and he's like, you have to fill out this paperwork. Okay. So he comes around and gives everybody the paperwork. I'll start filling out the paperwork. And then we fill out the paper. Then we give it back to him. Then it's like 3 o'clock. That's like a half an hour process too.
Yeah.
I'm already, this from one, now we're at 3 o'clock. I've 2 hours. I've already been
like
here.
Disney World. Yeah.
Okay. All right. At 3 o'clock, he comes out and he goes, if you are not on this list that I have in my hand, then you are not getting a vaccine today. Okay? So that's like three. And then he gets to me at like 3:15. Okay? He's like, he goes through everybody, blah, blah, blah. He gets to me. He goes, I go, you know, Theodore Deutsch, Ted Deutsch. He goes, I don't see you on here. I go, are you sure? Are you positive? Julie Brooke, my sister-in-law, blah, blah. I said, Julie Brooke, my sister-in-law, called up and put me on the list. Blah,
I even
blah,
gave
blah.
Your birth date.
Okay. You had to give the birthday?
I gave your birthday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I forgot. I didn't know that. Okay. All right. So I forgot that. So he goes, well, you're not on this list, so you can't get a shot. You have to go. I'm like, and these people, you know, everybody, we've been all standing in line for like an hour now. And all these people are like looking at me like, who's this idiot? You know, what does he think he's doing? You know,
he's going to get in line.
He just shows up, getting in line. What do you think? You're going to get a shot, dude? So I'm like, I won't say that on the air. I'm like, oh, fill in the blank. And I like left. Okay.
And you sent me a text.
Okay, so I'm walking out the door to go to the car, and I like sent you a text. No, you know, not on, name on list, not on list, no shot for me. Go home.
I'm like, oh my.
Okay, all right. So then you get my text.
And I get on the phone and I call. And
right. Okay, well, I get in the car.
And you start driving.
Right. And
like
you're like
any
sending
man,
me these
instead
texts.
Of waiting.
I wasn't waiting.
Instead
I was
of
like,
waiting.
Right. I was not waiting. I was like driving. And the highway where you're at is like, It's like about 5-6 miles. So I start driving down this road to get back on the highway.
And I start texting you, wait, I'm going to call. Okay. Wait.
All right, so then I get on
the... But you're not reading your text while you're
driving. No, I'm not. And I'm, you know, that's a lawful thing to do. I'm following the law. And so then you call up, and I'm like, I just got on the highway. And so it's I say, Julie, so I go, it's like, Julie, you know, I was there. They sent me to go home, blah, blah. I go home. She goes, turn around right now and go back. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Go back. You're on the list. He wrote it in Chinese. And I'm like, what are you ever talking about? He goes, yeah, the guy writes in Chinese. I'm like, okay.
No, I just said they couldn't read his writing or something. They couldn't read his writing.
Okay. So then I have to get off at this Edwin Moses. I think that's like near University of Dayton. I get off there. I turn back around. You told me,
I don't know where I'm at. I didn't know where I was. You're on the list. You're on the list. I promise.
I get back in the car, and then it takes me like, I turn back around. It's like another 15 minutes to get back there, okay? Right. So I get back there, and I go in the door, and there are about maybe four people. There's like four people before me, and then there was this one lady, and then there was this this lady with her son there. And I get back in line. I go, oh, they found my name on the list. I had to get back in line. They go, okay, come on.
That was sweet.
Yeah, they were not like, you know, getting the back of the line, you know, or whatever. They were, yeah. And so then about 10 minutes later, the guy comes around, the same guy with the list, and he goes, I understand you found my name. He goes, yeah, I found your name. He writes in Chinese.
Oh, is that what it is?
The guy that was the nurse, I don't know if he's a doctor or the nurse.
Nurse practitioner, pharmacist.
Yeah, giving the shots. He writes in Chinese, and I don't read his writing. I'm like, who can read Chinese to begin with, dude?
Well, I know, yeah, I understand, yeah, my kids said that it was, one of my other children also
I saw Julie Lerner and Steven, they were,
and like, behind them
and
were my
Sharon,
kids,
Sharon and Spiegel, right. And Walter.
Yeah, so then you wrote me back and you go, do you know these, and I said, no, I know who they are, this and that. In the meantime, my kids come back, because one of them wasn't on the list, but then they found her too. Right. It must have been that the handwriting was not correct.
Right, so it was just so strange, because like, you know, I get there. I'm like, I've got like 2.5 hours invested in this. I'm going to get a shot. I'm so happy and joyful. And then he's like, you're not. And then my whole countenance just sunk. Right. It just, you know, like you just went from like 100 down to zero.
It's
you
like
know,
losing
you're
a race.
Lets the wind out of your sails like immediately. I mean, it was just like, whoosh.
Oh, well, imagine how I felt when I had made all these phone calls, you know, and the thing is on Friday, I'd gotten a call and I sent Pam Sakes and I said, look, get up there. You have 1 hour. Make sure the oven is off. Put your phone in your purse. Put your purse in your car. Check to make sure.
They got a shot for her, too?
Yeah, I got it on Friday night. But And I keep getting calls. I got one yesterday for someone who had to be there in 20 minutes, and I didn't have anyone really on my list that could drive there in 20 minutes.
I just gave you a name. You can give them.
So, but I did, what I have been doing, some of them, will, when they do call, will say, no, we cannot substitute. And some of them will say, yes, we're happy to substitute.
Yeah. I mean,
because it was supposed to be me on the list anyway, so essentially. But I'm honest with all of them. I said, look, I took the trial, and I just was unblinded, and could you give it? I have a long list now, which I'm fulfilling my list first.
And there were people there that were... There were some seniors there. There were some people 60 and older, but there were some people that were, I'd say, middle age, maybe 30, 40. And then there was this lady behind me that had her and her kid were there, and he was probably like 18, maybe. I mean, he was not, you know, in the risk group.
So three of my three children's spouses. Right. All felt guilty about doing this. All three of them. I have to say, I'm very proud of my children for being...
The 60-year-olds are the ones that are...
I have to be very
proud
of my children-in-laws because they have very, very strong desires
and
morals.
So
each one of them called individually, regardless of what I said, and said that... And spoke with the pharmacist.
I'm 30.
And what the pharmacist said to them is, look, here's the deal. Yes, it is for people who are 65 and older and 65 and younger who have diseases.
Right.
But we can't fill sometimes the list fast enough and it becomes an emergency to fill them or we have to waste them. And the state of Ohio has given us permission to give them out when we need to.
So my question now...
So please don't cancel.
Right. Now at Rite Aid, do they... they'll take, I think they'll take anybody. As
long as they're not wasting it.
Are they doing them daily, or is it just on Sundays or
I don't know, but I it's each one is doing it at a different time, but it's all of them. All my calls are coming from Dayton, and it's always a ton last weekend. But also what I understand is that when you sign up electronically through Rite Aid to get it the correct way,
right,
you have to follow the rules that way. It's just okay when they do the fill-in. And when the first time I spoke with the pharmacist, when he called me the first time to say that he had three shots or four shots for us on Sunday, he said to me, let me count if I can add one more. And he says, I heard him counting. He said, yeah, I have this many spaces left that I need to fill.
How many, did he have like 200 shots or something like that?
I want to say they had 150 shots.
Okay,
and he had,
maybe.
Yeah,
okay, maybe
and then,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
And there was like, in the, right, he was counting, he said, yeah, 29. He said, no, I can, yeah, I've got enough room.
So I got the shot, and you know, you get up there and you go in. He's like, which arm do you want? And I start telling him the story about the writing in the Chinese. He starts laughing.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, and then the lady that was writing the stuff down, she's like, oh, as I'm wearing my Ohio U hat.
Yeah.
She goes, did you go to Ohio U? I go, yeah. And she goes, I went to Ohio U too. I go, really? And so we started kidding. It was, you know, it was fun after that. And then I got the shot. And drove, you know, that you were supposed to wait there in
minutes,
the parking
yeah
lot to make sure you don't have any reaction. And then I drove home. I was fine. The next day I woke up and my arm was like throbbing.
And that's okay.
It was throbbing and it was hurting. And then I got to the office and told her, you know, I told Judy and Melissa they were like, okay. So I said, my arm hurts. And he goes, did you take some Tylenol? Because you're supposed to take Tylenol. They tell you. I said, no, I didn't take any. So I always keep a couple of aspirin here at the office. And I took some. And I was fine after that.
For
and
all the people that give you headaches.
Yeah, I get a lot of headaches here. So, and then I was fine. The second day, it hurt a little bit, but not as much. And then today, it doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah.
And then I'm scheduled to go back on Sunday the 21st.
Correct, yeah.
And get the
so the rule
shot
of thumb on that is we actually had to call the Department of Health to find out about the rule because we may not be able to make that date. The question is that you can get the shot up to 2 or 3 days early. Ideally, it's at 3 weeks, up to 6 weeks. But if it has to be, it can be within 3 months. So if there is a problem on a date, the problem is to try to find a location that will take you. And you have to make sure if you took Moderna, you take Moderna again. If you took
Pfizer,
you take Pfizer again, yeah. But my kids came home and they said, now they're not from this area. They both said, oh, we could tell there was a lot of Jewish people in line.
Well, there was a few people. And I asked Tracy, did you call them or no?
No, I didn't.
They must have found out.
It's all this gossip. Yeah, because Sharon Spiegel and I got on the phone and I called her. I said, I heard you were behind my kids in line because they came home and they
said
there was a family. Well, you said that you saw the Spiegels, but my kids came home, didn't know the Spiegels, and they said, there was this family behind us, the Spiegels. The Spiegelmans, maybe. The Spiegels. I don't know. But it ended up being it was the Spiegels.
Right,
and I
actually,
I got to tell you, you know, we are in the volunteer issue of the American Israelite this week. And after I had called, I actually called back the pharmacy. I said, I understand you've got a lot of chaos there. Would you like someone to come up and volunteer and help you organize? And they said, no, unfortunately, you have to be an employee. But Sharon Spiegel did the same thing. That while she was there, she said, do you need someone that can help you organize? And they said, no, you have to be an employee. So here we are, you know, two Jews in the Cincinnati Jewish community, and we both, you know, raised our hand and said, you know, we could volunteer. And that's, you know.
Word is getting out. These vaccines are now starting to be, you know.
Right, and Johnson
&
Johnson is out now, and that's the one that I got. I got the Johnson & Johnson. That was the trial I was participating in, so I took one vaccine.
Okay.
I'm
hearing from people, just friends and stuff, that there's a lot of vaccines that are now happening.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting vaccinated.
And they lowered the age to 60, so you would have been able to get it this week anyway, hopefully.
Right. My buddy got a shot today, and then, you know, it's starting to warm up. It's spring. Spring is starting. The daffodils are starting to come up through the, if you look at in your garden, they're starting to come up. And I think we've turned the corner. And I was talking to someone at Shul yesterday, and one of the synagogues is going to start having Kiddush after Passover.
Okay.
So Kiddush is starting up again.
Is the rule that you have to be vaccinated? Because I just read there's a cruise going out of Israel. from just, Royal Caribbean, right, bingo, but you have to be vaccinated right, in order to get on
right,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have to, well, I
did
have
I
a little,
read that
I have
in
little,
the American Israelite?
Yes, you did. I have a card. I don't know if you got, did you get the card?
No, because I'm part of the trial. But
okay,
when
I can show you my card. My card says, you know, Pfizer, and it's got a number, a control number on it of what it is. And then when I come back to get the second shot, and they'll fill it in again and sign it. And you, I guess you carry around this card to show you've got the vaccination.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to get something from, I went through CTI.
Right,
Get some sort of a letter saying that I was vaccinated. But yeah, it's an exciting time. It's almost like a rebirth. It's spring.
It is.
Then we're going to have Passover. And for the Gentile population, it's Easter. So it's a good rebirth time.
Well, and Passover is like the end of the month.
Right.
And it's only, you know, it's like 4 weeks or less after Purim. I think 4 weeks. And I've got to get the kitchen cleaned out.
Yeah.
And we've got to start on that. This Sunday, we'll start catching up and getting everything cleaned out. And then start cleaning out the refrigerator next week, and then putting all the stuff away next the week, and then we got to bring all our get everything cleaned out of the kitchen,
and then bring your
then
Passover.
We got to bring all our Passover stuff upstairs from downstairs in the basement.
So I have a story about that. When I was a kid, it was a beautiful spring day, and my mother was getting ready for Passover, and she had emptied out the top cabinets, and she bent down to pick up the Passover dishes, and she didn't stand back up again. And that was, I think, the last time we changed dishes for a long time because she hurt her back.
Oy.
Yeah.
Like a disc?
I don't know what she did. I was a kid. But she, I'm sure after she hears the podcast, she's going to call in and explain the whole situation. But I can remember the sun was, it was a beautiful day. I remember looking at, that's when they did traction. And we went and visited her at the hospital, and they did traction then.
Well, that must have been like a vertebrae where they kind of try and move, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
whatever she did, it was Passover, so I was traumatized. Changing the dishes.
Okay. Well, now that we've gone through all of our kibitzing and our updating to everybody.
So we have a special guest, and this is going to be our first try with making a phone call on an interview rather than doing a Zoom interview.
Right.
And so we are going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are going to have Ray Warren discussing Sorrel and volunteers in Israel. Okay, so thanks, Ray, for coming on, and we're going to start the interview. Ted's going to say what he's going to say.
All right, so Ray Warren, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and your family and why you're on the American Israelite newspaper podcast, Let There Be Light podcast.
Okay. Hi, so my name is Ray Warren, and some information about me. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I attended college and received a bachelor's in science and biochemistry at Stony Brook and a PhD in cell biology at Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo. Before moving to Cincinnati in 1982, I lived in Seattle, and I worked at Procter & Gamble for 33 years. I'm married to my college sweetheart, Nancy. We've been married 43 years and have three grown children, Sarah, Ariel, and Jacob.
Very good, very good.
You know, one thing about Ray is I always thought your name was maybe Raymond, but I have since learned, since I Googled you, that you are actually Raphael. So who are you named for and your children? Tell us a little bit about who your children are named for.
Of course, sure. So I am named after my maternal grandfather, and name was Raphael. Actually, I'm sorry. I'm named after my paternal grandfather, Raphael. And so he perished in the Holocaust. And so a lot of our family members are named after people who perished in the Holocaust. So I'll give some ideas. So as I said, I'm named after my paternal grandfather. My oldest daughter, Sarah Batsheva, is named after my maternal and paternal aunts. My middle daughter, Ariel Mindel, is named after my father and my maternal grandmother. And my youngest son, Jacob Adam, is named after my maternal uncle and my father's first child, who also perished during the Holocaust.
Wow. I actually had a chance to listen to your history through the Cincinnati Holocaust and Humanities Center. It's quite moving.
Well, the Holocaust had a major impact on him and his family.
Yes, they did.
All right. So, tell us. Let's move on to how you fell upon Sarel, Sarel, and VFI, sure. And tell us about your volunteer work with them, and tell us about that.
Sure. So I retired from Procter & Gamble in 2016, and I'd always thought of volunteering in Israel, and I didn't really know exactly what I would do. And so after I retired, I did a Google search, right? That's what everyone does, for volunteer opportunities, and discovered this organization called Sarel. And so Sarel is a program that started over 30 years ago. It was about bringing volunteers to help with the harvest and fill the gap left by soldiers serving in the Lebanese War. That's in the 1980s. It has developed into helping with military logistics on various bases throughout Israel, from medical resupply to warehouse organization. And so instead of privately contracting this work out or having soldiers perform this work, Israel's created an opportunity for non-Israelis and actually also Israelis to volunteer. And so if you think about it, it's a wonderful way to connect. The number of volunteers varies from year to year and obviously crisis to crisis. Prior to COVID, there would be about 4,000 volunteers throughout the year. They would be volunteering anywhere from 1 week to 12 weeks. About 60% of us come from the U.S., Canada, and France. And surprisingly, about half the volunteers are not Jewish.
Wow.
The age range, you know, the age range for volunteers is from 16 years to over 90 years old.
Wow.
And I've met a few 90-year-old folks.
Wow.
And so now Volunteers for Israel, or VFI, right, is the American equivalent organization for Sarel. So if you want to apply for Sarel, it needs to be through Volunteers for Israel.
What does Sarel mean?
Right.
Oh, boy. I'll have to look that up. I don't know.
Is Sarel a Hebrew word?
It must be a Hebrew word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the Hebrew word for volunteer is mitnagav, and we have that, actually, the Sarel volunteers now have an opportunity to purchase a kumta or a beret.
Right.
So, some of you may know that in the Israeli Armed Forces, each of the various units have their own beret that has a distinct color.
Right.
And so, a few years ago, the Army created a beret for us. And so it's kind of a rust-colored beret. And on it, it says, you know, Sarel and Mitnagav, you know, volunteer. So we always feel proud wearing it.
I was going to ask you if a quick synopsis of those three experiences. And when you apply for Sarel, what is your financial responsibility as a volunteer?
Sure. Okay, so... So as a volunteer, you live on the base, you sleep on the base, you eat on the base. And so while you're on the base, which is 5 days a week, you have no expenses. Okay. So all your expenses are taken care of.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have a place to sleep, eat, and whatever. And you get clothes, you get uniforms to wear. And actually that's kind of a little bit of a joke because the first day on base, you know, you're kind of going through this whole bucket of clothes and you're trying to identify something that's going to fit. So you kind of go through a clowning experience. But in terms of your expenses are getting to Israel. And then if you stay extra time in Israel, obviously that's your expense. And you may have an expense on the weekend. And why I say you may have an expense, Sarel has a hostel in Tel Aviv.
Uh-huh.
And so if you want to spend Shabbat, you want to spend the weekend in Tel Aviv at the hostel, you can sign up for it. And it's either extremely low cost or free.
Right.
So other than your travel expenses, you may not have much more expense at all. So I usually go for more time than my volunteer, you know, an opportunity to travel, a tour, taste wine, taste food, things like that, so
besides the expenses, how was the army food?
So the army, you know, you get three meals a day,
three squares a day,
and the hot meal of the day is lunch, and that's the main meal. Breakfast and dinner is, I guess, a little bit on the shabby side. You're going to get to eat a lot of salad and hummus and, you know, and baba ganoush,
right,
and things like that. But the midday meal is quite substantial. Huh. And you won't go hungry.
Right.
And it's better than camp food.
Is there halava in the morning at breakfast? Because every time you go to this buffet, there's halava. I always take a big chunk for just in case I need that snack at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure there's halava. I haven't had halava.
I'm volunteering now.
Because it made me, it really, I gained a lot of weight eating a lot of halava. So I kind of steer away from it now.
All right, so.
So a quick synopsis. Okay. I know you had three different separate experiences of which you kept some sort of you kept like a diary that you shared with me. So mm-hmm. give us a synopsis of those, because they were three very individual experiences.
Sure. Right. Absolutely. So so my first experience was in 2017. And I also want to preface it. When I go to Israel, I typically go in the fall. And the fall is really the best. The fall and the spring are the best seasons to go to in Israel, because you could be in Tel Aviv, you can be in the desert, and it's just, the weather is beautiful. You know, it's not overbearing, it's not humid and things like that. So the first time I went was the fall of 2017, and I was on a base called Tel HaShomer, where volunteers, and for this first trip, most of the volunteers were actually from Montreal, Canada. And at that time, I was 64, and I was among the youngest volunteers. Indeed, we had three people in their 90s.
Wow.
Most of these people have volunteered several times and or come to Israel to volunteer for months each year. So it was really quite inspiring, as well as, you know, pretty humbling. And also, because of the time of the year, most of the volunteers are retirees. They wouldn't be students. Students typically come, you know, during the summer months when they're off. Now, the function of the space is medical resupply. And so what I mean by that is that we would create medic kits for combat soldiers, as well as various kits to stock field hospitals. So I'm sure you've heard that when some disaster strikes in the world, Israel will send a field hospital to the area. Well, volunteers generally produce these medical kits. And these medical kits are also used for training soldiers. And as we, you know, as we just described, you know, as a volunteer, you live, sleep, and work on base. The living conditions are, you know, pretty Spartan. It's we're certainly not a 5-star hotel.
No.
The day starts with breakfast at 8 a.m., followed with flag raising and singing of the Israel National Anthem, Hatikva. And for this first trip, it was particularly poignant for me. So each morning, a different volunteer has an opportunity to salute and raise the flag. And I must admit, when I was given this opportunity, so many emotions welled up inside of me. I mean, you think about Jews having wandered stateless for 2,000 years, being the target of hateful and murderous mobs, of all our brothers and sisters who perished in the Holocaust. And this was even more poignant, being that I'm a child of Holocaust survivors. And so now I had this special privilege to raise the Israeli flag on Israeli soil. So that was my first thing. My second stint, I was at an Army training and tank training base that was located about 15 miles east of Gaza. And so here we were basically engaged in warehousing, sorting used clothing and equipment for cleaning, possibly recycling, unloading transport trucks, sorting clean clothing for future use. And I also had the opportunity to work in the base kitchen, preparing salads and helping the mashgiach, or the soldier kashrut supervisor, to make sure there were no insects in the rice grains that would render, you know, the food possibly treif or not kosher. And so we were located on the tank training side of the base. So to give you an idea, so the tank, these tanks are Merkava tanks, which are huge, okay? So Merkava tank can hold three soldiers, right? So, I mean, they're big. And when they were out in the field, and that, they could be like a quarter mile from us, you can hear the wheels screech. You could feel a rumble in the air. It was really kind of remarkable. And we also had an opportunity to climb into a tank and get a demo of its speed. These Merkavas can move at up to about 30 miles an hour. I mean, that's fast, because these tanks weigh a huge amount, you know, like tons, okay? So now, a highlight of the trip was meeting this person, General Benji Gruber, And so he founded a program called Ethics in the Field. And it's a training program that most, if not all, combat soldiers receive. And, you know, it kind of sounds like an oxymoron, you know, like ethics in the field, a battlefield. But it's become critical to the mental well-being of Israeli soldiers, especially in urban combat. And so the training has a few different aspects to it, especially when faced with an enemy such as Hamas, who have very little value for life. There are three elements. One is use force only when to accomplish a mission. Two, use force only against the enemy. And three, if there's collateral, that is civilian non-combatants, it must damage. It must be proportional to the immediate or current threat posed by the enemy. So the question is, so why does Israel do this? You know, wouldn't it be easier to go into conflict like Rambo style, right, and kill him and everyone in sight, regardless of the threat?
Right.
And so he gave us two answers that was really quite moving. One was, you know, killing non-combatants indiscriminately becomes a fundraising opportunity for Hamas, right?
Yep.
And then, but even more importantly is the emotional toll it puts on the Israeli soldier.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Imagine an Israeli who has to serve in the army for 20 to 30 years. And during that time, and unfortunately, he'll likely see military action. So that soldier enters the army with, you know, some high degree of ethical humanity. But being in any army reduces that, right, to some extent. So it's the goal of the Israeli army to be kind of a force of resistance, that is to maintain as much of that humane and ethical behavior of the soldier, so he or she comes out as normal as possible.
Right.
So to give an idea, what's a consequence of this? If you look at the suicide rate among Israeli soldiers compared to American soldiers, the suicide rate among Israeli soldiers is 5%. Compared to the American soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, there may be other factors, but this is one element that is really so important to maintain that sense of humanity and ethics.
Right.
Actually,
Stephanie and I were watching this movie last night called Brothers, and it's just mm-hmm. about something just like this. The one brother is a captain in the army. Goes to Afghanistan. I won't tell you the whole story, and the other brother's got some mm-hmm. other issues. And the one brother that's a captain is in Afghanistan. I won't tell you the whole story, but mm-hmm. it's a moral and ethical dilemma that he goes through and changes mm-hmm. him for life. And sure. It's directly related to what you do as a soldier in the field and how that affects you. I mean, it you know, you're mm-hmm. a human being. When you do something against somebody else, it's going to affect you the rest of your life. And this affected Absolutely. This guy. So yeah, I totally agree with this whole thing of, you know, how to deal with that and what, you know, you have to deal with the consequences. If you have to do something when you're a soldier and the consequences you have to live with the rest of your life. I mean, I'd recommend people watch that movie. It'll, mm-hmm. it'll really make you think. It's called Brothers. It's out right now.
Yeah, right.
And what about your other two experiences?
Yes, especially my last experience. My last experience was 2 years ago because last year was canceled because of COVID. So my last experience was on a paratrooper combat training base. Very different kind of experience. So this base was located somewhere in the Negev. I don't know where.
Right.
It was in the middle of nowhere. And so one thing you get when you're on these combat bases, you realize that the Israeli army is composed of young people. I mean, officers are in their 20s.
Yeah.
On this base, the commander of the base was in his 40s, father of several young children. And although he lives in a nearby community, this guy's on the base from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. I mean, he's on the base virtually all the time. And so how do I know he's on the base so early? Well, this commander happened to be Dati, or Orthodox. And I would pray with him on the base synagogue. So I knew he was there. So anyway, so what did these kids, these 17, 18-year-old trainees, work their butt off to gain acceptance into these elite combat units? And so in one of the areas, we could see these posters with the motto of the paratroopers. In Hebrew, a paratrooper is called tzanchan. In plural, it's tzanchanim. And so you see these posters. One poster reads, Acharei l'tzanchanim. Translated means after me, the paratroopers, meaning it's about leadership, okay? Or another poster, Pa'am Sanchan, Tamid Sanchan, once a paratrooper, always a paratrooper, which means camaraderie.
Same thing as like Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Semper Fi.
Mm-hmm. Right. Semper Fi. Mm-hmm. Now, these trainees, you see these trainees, they're running from morning to night.
Yeah.
Okay. You see them engage in what's called Krav Maga training, which is hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so you see these kids being trained to beat the living daylights out of each other. All right.
Yeah.
And push-ups and sit-ups all over.
Oh, they're in fantastic condition, those guys.
Yeah. Then you see these wounded evacuation drills where trainees simulate the evacuation of like an equivalent of a 250-pound wounded soldier and their equipment on a stretcher.
Wow.
And so the objective is you have to run across various terrain and you have to keep this stretcher perfectly parallel to the ground, right? Otherwise, this injured soldier is on, you know, he's off, right? And then there was simulated anti-terrorist training. So in this case, and we went through this, the soldier is holding this like electronic weapon,
right,
and watches this video screen that occupies an entire wall. And your objective is to either disarm or kill the terrorist among a crowd of innocent civilians.
And you have to pick the terrorist out, in a split second.
And they take children and use them to...
Human shields.
Right. Yeah. Right. So obviously, most of us volunteers fill the exercise, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But these guys are trained. I mean, these guys go through, you know, hours and days of training to make sure they get it right. And they have all different kinds of scenes that were filmed on location. So let's say in Sevron, or by a bus stop, or in a train station, or all these various places that represent, you know, real locations
and real people. Right. They've got to be prepared for any situation. You just never know what's going to happen.
Right. So now there were two highlights of this particular trip. And one was for this trip, we were able to create an OLPON to work with soldiers on their English skills. So that was different from the other experiences and really added a kind of a level of engagement.
Yeah.
And the second experience that kind of ingrained in my mind was there was a memorial service for the 24th Yahrzeit site of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin.
Right.
And so we went to the base auditorium and it was packed with staff. Memorial candles were lit. And the base commander comes in, he kisses the mezuzah on the doorpost. Right. And so, first of all, in what other army would you see something like this? Right. And then he speaks. And basically, the theme was he reminded everyone that Israel was the homeland for all Jews. More was needed to reconcile the left and right, the Haredi and the non-religious. And being a soldier was a privilege that carried a responsibility to be part of the solution.
Right.
What powerful words.
Yep.
Right. What powerful words. I know during each of these trips, you know, I'm often asked by a soldier or whatever staff, you know, what are we doing here? You know, why are we doing this? And for me, the reply has always been simple. And I tell them I'm a Jew and I love the Jewish people and I'm in Israel to support them. And, you know, we often think, you know, I mean, while sending dollars to various Israeli causes is good and certainly important, but to me, it's equally important if you can directly connect with Israelis. You know, despite how the world attacks Israel, not necessarily physically, but politically, for example, the United Nations, Israelis need to know they are not alone. And so for me, this is my kind of my little payback for all the good Israel does for me, both emotionally and spiritually, and frankly, for all of world Jewry. So that's what's in it for me.
Okay. So if someone is thinking of participating in Sorel or VFI, what might you say to them to encourage them to go do that?
Sure. So, I mean, what I would say, you know, if you want a unique Israeli experience, you know, where you're literally helping the country and you have an opportunity to meet and be with soldiers, to express camaraderie, where you are giving back, there's nothing like this.
Yep.
You also have an opportunity to tour the country on your free time or VFI. For me, that means visiting family and friends and visiting the great Israeli wineries and going to Israeli concerts.
Huh.
VFI also has supplemental touring programs, including archaeological digs. And there are also programs for college students tied to Birthright and summer high school programs.
Right. And gap year, which is MASA, which I went on that thing. MASA, MASA is for mm-hmm. like gap year and college. Right.
I didn't know you went on gap year.
No, no, I didn't. I went and as a journalist and to cover it when they were rolling it out like 10 years ago.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything, Ray, that we didn't touch upon that you'd like to let us know about Sorrel or VFI?
So the only other thing is, I mean, one thing, not necessarily VFI or Sorrel, which I think are really wonderful, you know, it's a wonderful organization and great opportunity, is that when you're in Israel, you get to learn about things that you don't hear about in the United States. And I'll just give one example. So my second year I was there, that was the year of the Tree of Life massacre in Pittsburgh.
Oh, right.
And that weekend, the following week, I was in Sderot, which is in a large town in southern Israel.
Yep.
And so while I was there, I learned that during the weekend of the Tree of Life, there had been a constant rocket attack from Gaza to Sderot. And so the people in Sderot were in bomb shelters the entire weekend.
Yep.
Right? So we didn't know about this. I didn't know about this when I was in Israel until I was in Sderot. And so, I started to think about, like, what's the disconnect here? Why don't we know about this?
Right.
And obviously, you know, we've got Iron Dome, which is an anti-ballistic missile, which has certainly saved who knows how many hundreds, thousands of lives in Israel, from the rocket attacks from Gaza. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think, you know, Iron Dome has kind of lulled us into thinking, okay, now that we have Iron Dome, we don't have to worry.
Right.
But there's a consequence. I mean, imagine people young and old have to be in bomb shelters for a weekend or on a regular basis. I mean, that has a tremendous psychological toll. And so for me, you know, one of my supplemental trips in Israel was to spend time in Sderot and work in the high school for a few days. And so I really had, you know, just special opportunity to meet the high school students and really talk to them. And again, reinforcing to the Israeli that they are not alone.
There's a strong Cincinnati connection to
Sderot
because JNF, with the help of Nina Paul and Pam Sakes, worked on that indoor playground there.
And also the Boy Mills.
Yeah.
I should tell you guys my Sderot story sometime when I got left in Sderot when I was going to buy a talking doll for my daughter. But that's another time. So we want to please describe your volunteer positions both within and without and outside the Jewish community.
The other positions that you do.
Sure. So so right now I'm on the I've been associated with the Jewish Cemeteries of Greater Cincinnati for many years, and right now I'm on the executive committee. I'm the incoming president.
Yep.
Once Larry Newman completes his term.
Yep.
And JCGC is a great organization.
Yes, it is.
We have tremendous volunteers from all walks of Jewish life, and you know our mission is to preserve our 25 plus cemeteries, honor those who have died.
Yep.
And, you know, it was one of the first institutions, first Jewish institutions in Cincinnati. Actually, it was the first Jewish institution.
Burial Society.
Right. And so right now we're celebrating 200 years.
Yep.
So we're the first Jewish organization in Cincinnati. We're celebrating our 200th anniversary, and it's the oldest Jewish institution west of the Alleghenies. I think I also mentioned I'm on the Speakers Bureau of the Holocaust and Humanity Center.
Yep.
And so actually I'll be speaking next Wednesday if you want to zoom in. I'm also a tax counselor with the ARP Foundation. And so we provide free tax filing service, mostly to retirees, but also, to anyone who would like our service. And I'm an adjunct professor at UC College of Pharmacy, and I mentor master's students.
Don't forget you're on the Amberley City Council.
Right. Well, you asked me about volunteer effort. So I do get a nominal fee for being on Amberley Council, but it is essentially volunteer.
Now,
you're kind of quite a busy guy there for being retired, aren't you?
I am pretty busy, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Ray Warren that maybe we don't know. Is there something like a hobby that you have, an unusual interest?
Like to go fishing, play golf.
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about your social life.
Sure. So I love biking, and I got a new bike a couple of years ago. I had my old bike for like 40 years. I got a new lightweight aluminum bike.
Really?
Or mixed metal bike, whatever.
Right.
And so I do a lot of biking in the spring and summer and early fall.
Yeah, that's it. I've seen you at the Loveland Bike Trail.
Yeah, I'll go from all the way in the south, close to the city,
right.
You know, downtown, all
right.
The way up north.
How much does that bike weigh?
So this bike weighs under 20 pounds.
Whew. Yeah. Remember back when we were younger, I had a Gloria, and then I had it was a French bike. It wasn't a Peugeot, but it was a French, and that thing weighed like 17 pounds. It was like,
yeah, really? I had a Peugeot. I bought a Peugeot when I was 18 years old. It was the first major thing I ever purchased.
I had a Jetan. Jetan.
Okay. Yeah. Jetan. Yeah.
Remember those? Yeah. That thing weighed like 18 pounds. It was like so you could pick it up with your finger.
Mm. No, Peugeot. The Peugeot was heavier. It was
a little bit heavier. Yeah. Yeah.
So I got this new bike, a Cannondale. I mean, what a difference in weight. And, you know.
Yeah.
And plus the gear shifting is like, you know, night and day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm also an amateur photographer.
Okay.
And I like the opera.
Wow. Okay.
You're quite a busy guy.
So, COVID is what we're all dealing with, and how have you dealt with COVID? And what's the first thing you're going to do when the world goes back to normal?
Did you get your vaccine yet?
I have received my vaccine.
Congratulations! And, we should say Mazel Tov on the Israeli.
Mazel Tov.
I got my second dose a little over 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm good.
Yeah.
And so what was life with COVID? Well, I haven't seen my children or grandchildren for many moons. Obviously, I started a Zoom account.
Yeah.
Right? As we all have.
Right.
And, you know, we live in our activities, especially indoors. You know, we don't go out to dine, no movies, limit shopping trips, order by mail. I became a subscriber to Netflix and PBS. So what do I plan to do? Well, I'm already been antsy. I've been talking to my wife. You know, we gotta plan a trip. You know,
a bike trip. How about a bike trip?
No, I want to go somewhere. I want to go somewhere.
Yeah.
This is cabin fever. Squish,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we gotta plan somewhere. So you know, maybe we should go to Hawaii or.
Oh, yeah.
Or Europe or something. Yeah. Just go somewhere.
Well, and, now you got the vaccine, you know, I mean.
You feel a lot better. You know, a lot of people cried when they got their vaccine.
I feel very emotional.
It's like a big sense of relief.
It really is. It's like a weight lifted off your shoulder now that you got the vaccine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, we know that you want to encourage others to volunteer in Israel and participate with Sorel. Please tell us how potential participants, can get in hold of Sorel and why you think that this is the experience of a lifetime.
Yep.
Okay, well, first of all, in terms of getting in touch, they can certainly get in touch with me directly. Or you could visit our website. You just do a Google search, Volunteers for Israel. It'll get you to our website and... You know, you'll see all kinds of pictures and all kinds of activities that we have. I mean, right now we have a weekly Zoom meeting, which covers various aspects of Israel. You know, we've had cooking classes, we've had different, you know, licensed tour guides taking us to various places in Israel, all through the VFI website. And so that's one thing about. About getting in touch.
Right.
And certainly if you want to register, you know, all the applications and information are there.
Okay.
Now getting back in terms of why you want to do this. As I said, for me, it's a matter of connecting with Israelis, connecting to Israel, directly connecting to Israel, and really showing an appreciation and thanks and being grateful for what Israel represents. Another thing I didn't talk about, being on the base, I mean, you'll see Israelis from all walks of life. I mean, during my second trip, you know, during the flag raising ceremony, we were doing flag raising with the soldiers. And there's this Ethiopian guy standing next to me, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, this young guy came to Israel, who knows, maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, came from an area that, you know, people were mostly illiterate.
Right.
And now he's in the Israeli army, speaks fluently, he's got a future, and you know, he's directly connected to the Jewish people. We're all connected, you know, we're all connected. And it was just, again, it's just another emotional moment for me, standing next to this Ethiopian dude. So
okay. So we want to thank Ray Warren for coming on and being a volunteer in the Jewish community and in Israel and the world.
And a guest on our podcast.
And a guest on our podcast. Thank you. You've been a wonderful guest. We want to thank you.
We'd love to keep that relationship between you and Sorrel and VFI in the Israelites.
Well, I may, you know, after, if he goes this year, maybe call, you know, get in touch with us again and talk about his experience when he comes back, and we can, you know, bring him back on the show.
A nice story about it too.
Yeah.
Terrific.
All right.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Ray.
We'll be in touch.
Okay. It's been an honor.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye bye.
So we're back on.
That was a wonderful interview with Ray Warren, and it worked so well.
I didn't know anything about volunteers
from Israel. My parents have some friends that in the past have gone and stayed on the bases, and so they used to tell us about it.
Well, it's a very different, unique experience. Not only you go there and you volunteer on the base and you help out, and then I would imagine you probably want to stay there for another week or two in Israel after you do that. Kind of cruise around and tour around and then come back, but that sounds like a lot of fun and to live the life of an army
to wear the uniform and have that nice uniform. And we have a picture we're going to put on social media of him in the orange beret. It's a pretty nice color too.
Very cool.
And you know, I think one of the things when Ray and I were talking and preparing for this, he said to me something like, you know, you can go to Israel, you go and you travel, you tour. He said, but when you go this time, you're going to give back. You're going to give back to Israel. And you know, if you think about it, he talked about, you know, he's volunteering, he's giving back, but he's really giving of himself, and for all the things that Israel does for all of us.
We ran a little long, but so we wanted to talk a little bit about the news today, and then we're going to move on to the deaths, and then we're going to finish up. So on the front page this week is my mom's obituary. And it's
a beautiful picture of
her. It is. And it's been a very difficult several weeks. I'm, as you know, growing a beard, as you can see. And
you're scratching it a lot.
It's very itchy, scratchy. And I'm not a big fan of the beard. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to when I get to shave it off. But I won't give the date of when I get to shave it off. I'll just say I've got a couple more weeks to go until I get to shave.
Well, you're just very, very COVID also cool right now, because people are doing all sorts of things like not coloring their hair.
COVID cool.
You're COVID not coloring cool, their hair, right? Or they're cutting their own hair, or they're coloring their own hair. And they're, I mean, for me, the whole thing is with the stretchy pants, you know, like, I wear stretchy pants all the time, except when I come here, I actually try and put my blue jeans on, and they just don't feel the same anymore. It's not like you put on button pants and it's the stretchy pants.
I wear normal clothing every day.
I know
day.
You do, but I've been in stretchy pants now for a year.
Okay, and well, it's time
once
to,
a week I put
to,
the button pants on. It is not cool. That is not cool.
All right, so we're not gonna do from the pages this week. We are gonna go to the death notices, and then we're gonna finish up. So
don't forget to catch though on page 9 that great story about Royal Caribbean.
Okay, yeah,
going to Israel.
Then, so I'm on 22, and one of the obits is Harvey Reese. Now, I think I mentioned this before.
A number of times, yeah.
Okay, and there's a picture of the original Bilkers on Reading Road in Roselawn, and that's where I worked. I worked there. I was a stock boy.
That's where you got your work ethic.
I worked there as a stock boy. I also worked at Frisch's as a dishwasher. I was a dishwasher, busboy at there. But one of my first jobs was at Bilkers, and I loved it. I had a great time. Yeah. So Death notice is Bernetta Smith, age 96, February 25, 2021, 14 Adar, 5781.
And the next one is Margot Nathan, age 98, February 25th, 2021, the 13th of Adar, 5781.
Yes, right. Adar, not Adar, sorry. Ethel Willow, knee Les, Le, is it Leser? Les, Lesher?
Le-
Lesher? Lesher?
Lesher.
Lesher. Age 92, February 25, 2021, 13, Adar, 5781.
And I believe that is Barry Kaplan, who advertises in the Israelite. It's his mother-in-law.
Okay.
Yeah, it's his, it's Ann Willow's mother.
Okay, you're probably right. Okay. All right, you want to do the next one?
Carolyn Baum, knee Rothstein, age 94, February 23rd. 2021, the 11th of Adar, 5781.
And then Dr. David Kerman, age 96, February 22nd, 2021, 11 Adar, 5781.
And I want to point out that this week, everybody was over 90 years old, if you look.
They lived a long and fruitful life. And
may their memories
life.
Be for a blessing.
Yes. Yes.
And since you are still in Shloshim, we are also going to skip the joke of the week.
Right, right. For a couple more weeks. And then when Shloshim ends, then we'll start back. Things are starting to get back to normal. I mean, after the initial shock and the Shiva and then coming out of Shiva, and now I'm kind of working again. And it's a process. It really is a process.
Well, you've had a lot of changes in this last couple of weeks besides your mother and now the COVID vaccine. And so you've had a lot of changes and spring is coming. And
it is. It's today it's like 50 degrees outside.
Beautiful.
I can't wait to get outside and open up that sunroof and get some fresh air. And
maybe I'll get to take my new baby out for a walk in the fresh air today.
Well, you better bundle that kid up. Bundle them up. Do you have like a little stroller for
my daughter has a really
beautiful... She's probably 15 different strollers.
No, she actually has a sister-in-law that had three baby boys in like 4 or 5 years, and so she has a lot of beautiful equipment from the sister-in-law.
It won't go to waste. Somebody will use it.
Yep.
So
yeah.
We want to wish everybody a great week. And
stay healthy.
This is my birthday.
Birthday
week
is Sunday.
Up,
yeah,
Sunday,
I've got a surprise coming for you. Yeah.
Oh boy. Hopefully, it's not another Ruth Bader Ginsburg menorah from the slow boat to China. Written in Chinese with my buddy at the Rite Aid in the Chinese section.
So, everybody, stay healthy. Have a good week. We will see you next week.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Shavua Tov. Bye bye.